You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you to everybody to be here today to listen to my presentation about chocolate, how we go from the plant to the delightful treat that we all like. So I started with some history to understand how we found out about chocolate. So the history goes back to roughly 2,000 years before Christ in Central America, so in the area where Mexico is located today. So there are testimonies that people there, the locals, were already using cocoa beans in roasting them and chewing them, basically, at the beginning. Then, later on, some more advanced civilization, that are the Mayans and the Aztec, started to use these cocoa beans as for drinks. So they would roast them, and they would then mix with water and other spices because the drink was quite bitter, quite acidic in taste. So so that's where we have a testimony of that plant already used, that spice, that is the cocoa, already used. Another great use for the Aztec was it was such an important piece of their culture that they used it as a currency. So they were exchange beans for currency. Now, few years come by, and we are in 1492, and Cristoforo Colombo from Italy sails to go to the Americas. And he runs, obviously, into the locals, into these beans, into these plants. And it took four trips before he decided that was worth to gather some of them and to bring it back to Europe to see if the local king, if Ferdinand King, was interested to this new plant, to this new treat. But the king, Ferdinand, was not interested, so it just fell apart. It was nothing important there. Later on, and we are talking just very few years later, 1519, someone from Spain goes to the Americas, so he's another explorer, and he goes to America, he starts exchanging relationship, let's say, with the Aztec, and he, in a meeting with the Emperor Montezuma III, he tries this drink, and he likes it, he thinks it's valuable, has some value. This drink is called by the locals cacahuat, and that's where it comes also the name of cocoa, basically. So he brings back these beans to Spain. The local court, so the king there, is very interested. So all of the sudden, Europe is being invaded by constant shipment between the Americas and Europe of these beans. And in fact, the local governments become so interested into this new thing that they start to tax heavily these beans. So that as it starts to spread around, it starts to also become only accessible to the elite, to the rich people, only to courts. So the beginning of chocolate as a drink, we are still talking about only as a drink, they didn't know anything about the solid form that we know now today, spreads in Europe, but only for high class, for the rich people there. And in fact, this is just a paint from a French artist that is showing how a young lady is pouring chocolate in one of those that spread around in that period that were called chocolate houses in Europe. Now let's go back instead, let's forward to nowadays. What is the world production of cocoa? Well, there is an interesting what is called the cocoa belt that runs around the equator where there are all the plants of cocoa. So we are talking about Latin America, where we started it basically in this region here, and then it's now covering the whole belt. Then we have Africa, and then we have also Asia. notice that the production is huge in Africa compared to these other continents, to these other parts of the world. So the majority of the cocoa comes from Africa. In terms of, again, production, this is another chart that shows how some of, specifically some countries in Africa, like Ivory Coast and Ghana, are very high in the production compared to the rest of the world, where we see smaller pieces of the pie. Okay, and you can see, for example, Brazil is another one that is here, but is 4% versus 21 or almost 40 of the other two countries. What is the consumption we have of chocolate? Well, if we look at the pie here, we see that United States is positioned pretty well. So there is a pretty large consumption of total cocoa or chocolate here. While if you look at the per capita, all these countries are all Europeans. The top of it is Switzerland. Switzerland has a absolutely one of my favorite chocolates, so that goes into my personal liking. So definitely there is a high consumption per capita of Switzerland, and instead the USA is the last in this list, in this partial list. All right, so that was interesting just to see those different numbers. Now, if we want to follow the whole cycle, how we go from the plant to the final product, here it is, the plant. The name of the plant is Theobroma cocoa. Theobroma means food of the god. Theo means god, and Broma is, comes from the food. So, interestingly enough, I was interested in finding out that the name itself was not given by the Mayan, that were big consumers, was not given by the Aztec, that were big consumers. It was given by the Europeans. So the Europeans gave the name food of the god for these new things that came to Europe. It's a small tree. It reaches roughly 25 feet tall. Usually they plant it always in the shade of bigger trees, in the shade of banana trees, in the shade of coconut trees, so that it also has some flavor from those other fruit around. Other things about the plant, well, it's an evergreen, and the origin is the Central and South America. The flowers is, I saw some pictures on internet, and the flowers are absolutely gorgeous, really beautiful flowers. They come in big clusters, so they come in thousands of them, but only a small amount will give the fruits, so only 10% is going to give fruits. In terms of cycle of the plant, I read that takes roughly 25 years of a tree can last 25 years. It takes roughly 4 to 5 years to become productive, so to produce the fruit. So those are just general information about the plant. And for the fruit, it takes roughly 6 months to go from the flower to the fruit and then being harvested. The fruit itself is this one, is what is called a pod. A pod has a soft outer skin, so it's kind of delicate. It's not too hard, even though it seems kind of harsh, kind of hard on the outer part, but it's not. It's quite soft. And it has an inside that is a white pulp, and this pulp is very sugary. It's made by several sugars, basically. Molecules of sugar. And within, inside this sugary pulp, there are what are the seeds of the plant. And these seeds are what are commonly called bean of the cocoa plant. The size of this pod is roughly 30 centimeters, so it's roughly almost a foot. And is the number of seeds that you can find inside are roughly between 20 and 60. So it takes 10 pods to obtain roughly 1 kilogram of, so roughly 2 pounds, of cocoa paste or cocoa liquor, what is also called cocoa liquor. The type of plants that we find for cocoa, the most common are three. Now, for the ones of you who might be more used to or acquainted with some of the types of coffees, there are two main types for coffees. One is Arabica and one is Robusta. Arabica is considered the one that has finer taste, is more expensive, more delicate. Same idea for these three plants. The Criollo is the one who has the most delicate flavor, that is less bitter, less acidic, but is also more delicate, so it's more expensive, and the production is much lower. There are less plants around, so that there is a much lower production that is only between 1 and 5% of the total production. The other type, instead, that is much more Robusta, means robust, much more strong, is the Forastero. It's what is called the Forastero. That has a much sharper, stronger taste, flavor. So he has more acidity, more bitterness compared to the other one, but it's very easy to plant, to have it. So makes up for the majority of the production in the world. And in fact, the majority of them is in Africa. This is very common in Africa, while the Criollo is more common into the Central America areas. And then there is a mix of the two, because people try basically to have a hybrid between the two types in terms of quality and in terms of easiness to have it around and to care for it. So the third one is called Trinitario because it was first introduced, was first made in Trinidad, in the island of Trinidad, and it has the characteristics that are between the two. And in terms of production, it's slightly bigger than the Criollo, but definitely still very small compared to the production that we see in the Forastero. Right, so those are just the main type of the plants. Now, in terms of processing, there are many, many steps to go from the plant, so from the fruit, to go to all the way to the chocolate we eat. Each step is important, but there are some of them that are really critical, not only important. Specifically, in this first part, so I have two slides for processing. In this first part, we see that there is the tree, then we harvest the tree, we have the pods, then we have the beans with the fermentation. This is a critical step. Then after fermentation, we have the drying. This is another critical step. Then after this, we gather all the beans, we ship them out, so they're on a truck, and then we go to the next part. So we go into the factory, we start to make some chocolate, and in the process, one critical part is this one, is the roasting of the beans. After the roasting, we have to crush them, then we have to do some other treatments, another critical step here, and I will go in more details about these steps. And in this last one is the conching and tempering, but we will see these words more in details. All right, so there are some steps that are absolutely critical to be controlled and to have a final product that has better quality compared to others. So the first part is harvesting. As you can see from this picture, it's all done by hand, because no matter what type of plant you're talking about, either the Criollo or the other ones, it's still quite soft skin, so it's still quite delicate. And so the way to do it is just by hand. They harvest it by hand. Then they open the pod in order to expose the seeds that are all surrounded by the pulp. So we see the white pulp. Then if you open the pulp, obviously you're going to see the brown, the darkish beans. And again, fermentation is critical. You will not have, so people have done studies, obviously, they can't have any cocoa flavor if they don't go through the fermentation process. So it's really the critical part that will will develop those compounds that will be critical to develop the final aroma, the final taste. Depending on where you are, obviously the money involved when you harvest those beans, you can have them laid down on many banana leaves and then covered by banana leaves to allow the fermentation process, or you can have them in bins, in boxes, in wood boxes, because these boxes have to have at least the capability of drainage of fluid, because while some reaction will be occurring, some liquid will form and it has to drain out, it shouldn't stay there. And so the alternative to this one is have boxes of different shapes, bigger, smaller, depending how much money the farmer has, covered by either banana leaves or some jute sacks. So still to allow some aeration on the beans. Now, this is a schematic. I don't want to go into each single detail because it's not critical, but it's a schematic that shows you how the fermentation happens, some of the processes that are happening during fermentation. And there are basically two main distinct phases. There is a first phase that is an anaerobic phase. As I'm sure everybody here knows, anaerobic means no oxygen, a reaction that happens with no oxygen. And the other one that is aerobic, that is with the help of oxygen. So these are the two main phases. The total time for fermentation is roughly a week. The anaerobic phase, the first phase, is going to happen in the first 2 days. So we have the beans that are there, covered by these leaves. We don't touch them. These reactions are happening in a natural way. And if you think of, some of you might be familiar with, we have a sugar that is fermenting. Fermenting is also the word used for wine, for making wine from the grapes, and that's exactly the same type of process. So there is a fermentation happening there. The sugar will transform into ethanol, into an alcohol. So you can see here the sugar that, with the help of yeast, goes into ethanol and carbon dioxide. And that's the first phase. You don't want to mix the beans. You don't want to touch them. But then it's the aerobic phase, because then instead another type of reaction starts to happen. The ethanol starts to react and become acetic acid. You want to favor now this reaction. The way to favor this reaction is that you help with oxygen. So you start mixing it. So in this second phase, it's important that the farmer is there and is mixing these beans, because that allows a more homogeneous system where temperatures are kept at the same level in each part of the system. So there is no, because all these reactions are exothermic, so there is a release of heat, so there is an increase of temperature. You don't want parts of your system that have a much higher temperature compared to another one. You want to have all the same type of reaction at the same time. And basically what we'll see is that at the beginning you see a grayish bean, and then this grayish bean becomes darker and darker as the fermentation occurs, as the process occurs. Specifically, these are three main steps, meaning in terms of pictures. This is when it's unfermented. There is no fermentation, so it's very rich of pulp with the sugar part. And the inside is the bean, is the cotyledon of this bean. So then the reaction starts to happen. As you can see here, the mass of the sugar, the pulp, starts to shrink. It's less, it's smaller. And there you can see here too, some liquid is going to be formed. And then the ethanol in the second phase, in the aerobic phase, is going to change into acetic acid. It's going to transform into acetic acid. And finally, you have the darker beans with very little pulp around. All right, so that's the idea of the three steps. This is I found this picture, this graph, very interesting and detailed about what is happening with the as time goes by. So we have here the number of days. So in this upper part, in these upper graphs, we have 1 day, 2 days, up to 8 days. And on the scale here is about the acetic acid, the ethanol, and the lactic acid. So some of the compounds that are being formed or transformed. So at the beginning, in the first 2 days, this is where everything before here is anaerobic. So you don't touch it, you don't do anything. It's happening by itself. And you have a peak of ethanol. So it's the highest concentration of ethanol. And the acetic acid is started to happen together with also the lactic acid. Then after this one, you start to mix. You help the aerobic phase, and you will have a peak of acetic acid that then starts to decrease, obviously. So there's a more transformation. In terms of timing and whatever is written here, notice this part here. From roughly day 6 on, mold starts to grow. So it means that it's critical to have a fermentation that goes at least 5 to 6 days. Going beyond, you have to be careful, because if you go beyond, you start to make mold. And you don't want that, because it will give a bad flavor to your chocolate. You don't want a moldy chocolate taste, right? So that tells you that there is a window where this process has to happen. So it has to be all designed, the whole process. And here is just how the color changes of the bean. So at the beginning, the bean is fatter because there is more pulp. The pulp is yellowish. And then it starts to go into darker colors. This one is a graph that shows the temperature that are happening within the system. So in the first 2 days, before you do anything, is the anaerobic. The maximum temperature is around 40 centigrade. That is roughly 105 Fahrenheit. The second part is 50s, 120. So you really want to make sure that it's everywhere is 120 Fahrenheit. It's not somewhere 140 and some other part is 100. So you want to make sure that you're mixing so that it's even, because otherwise you're burning some part and you are not fermenting some other part. All right, so that's the idea of also controlling the temperature. And again, this is the color tells someone who works in this field the quality of the bean, because if it's still gray, it means that it's under-fermented. They didn't do a good job on fermenting it. If it's violet, it is under-fermented. So wolf's fermented, but not enough, while it should have a brown color to be fully fermented. And this graph, I found it very interesting, because it shows you how the some components changes in terms of taste, in terms of what is our preference. So let's look at the colors. Let's look first at the red color. Before means what is the sensory effect, so the effect on senses before the fermentation, if we don't ferment the beans. What you will have is, there is not much of cocoa taste, but it's very bitter and it's very astringent, the dry mouth feel that you have with some compounds. If you ferment it, so if we go to the green color, when you ferment it, then you have a very strong cocoa characteristic taste, much smaller amount of bitterness, much smaller amount of bitterness, and you have been able also to highlight some of the flower taste that might come from other plants that are around, so some of the fruity taste. All right, so I thought this was a very interesting graph here. All right, so that's the fermentation. Then another phase that is, in any case, very critical is right after. We need to dry because the amount of humidity of water that you have there is too high. So the moisture content is too high. We want to go from 60% to 8%. If we don't get rid of that humidity, again, we have troubles because mold, because infection, so we want to get rid of that moisture. There are two main ways to do it. One is more traditional, that is sun dry. And so you can see these big, even concrete slabs or any kind of surfaces where they just place all the beans to dry in the sun. And they once in a while they rotate, they mix them just to make sure that the moisture is coming out from everywhere. Other types are instead mechanical. They, in some places, they need to do it mechanically if in the season of the after the harvest, the weather is too humid. It's so they can't do it unless you use a mechanical way. The chocolate connoisseur do prefer the method of drying it by the sun because it's more natural, because it's it doesn't have any flavor that might be imparted, might be given by the fire, by the whatever you're using it to dry it out mechanically, and also because might not be slow enough, because you don't want to make it too slow, you don't want to make it too fast, because if you do it too quickly, then some compounds might remain embedded in, entrapped in, because it, a crust forms, so they can't escape. Some volatile cannot escape, and it might have a more acidic taste. You don't want to do it too slow because otherwise, again, the mold may rise. So you don't want to have mold. So this is another critical step to be controlled. So at this point, we have a bean. It's a dark green with a certain composition. Many, many compounds, over 300. What are some of them? Well, the majority, as you can see from this one, is fat. It's what is called cocoa butter. That is a good fat. It's not a bad fat. So, but it's all is more than 50%. Then you have roughly 30% of carbohydrates. So the sugar is there. Some of the sugar is still there. The fibers, protein. Polyphenols. Polyphenols, 3%. Polyphenols, you might be familiar with, are the ones that are good for you, are those compounds that are able to fight aging because they are antioxidant compounds. So we like to have those around. And among those, there are the flavonols or flavonoids, as in other slides you might see from my presentation. So that's roughly the compound, the main composition. Now, this one is for the organic chemists that we have here to make them happier than just the chocolate talk. That is showing the structure of two of the compounds, that is the theobromine and the caffeine. So both of them are stimulants, basically. They're both in chocolate, and they're both stimulants. They're mild diuretic. Even theobromine is a mild diuretic. It dilates the blood vessel. And this is the one compound that's the reason why you don't want to give a dog some chocolate, because the dogs do not have the enzyme to break down this compound, so it can cause heart attack in high concentration. So depending on the size of the dog, if you have a small dog, really never do it. With bigger dog, they might just get hyper, but they don't. It doesn't kill them, but be careful. So that's why they say no chocolate for dogs. In terms of caffeine, the percentage of caffeine is very small. Some scientists even argue that there is any caffeine in chocolate. So they say no, we don't even should consider that there is any caffeine in chocolate, because the amount is so small that the whole stimulative effect, the whole hyper effect is given by this compound, not by the caffeine. But in any case, if you look at the amount that you might have, that you have, you need lots of Hershey's bar to get one cup of coffee in terms of comparison. So, all right, so we have done the fermentation, the drying, we have these cocoa beans. And health-wise, if you look around on the internet, many health sites says that before this one, so at this point, you want to eat this cocoa beans. You don't want to go further if you want to have the healthy food, because now you have all the things that are there, the basically the main one is the polyphenols, they're there. You don't want to do any type of processing afterwards, because otherwise you are going to destroy those polyphenols. You're going to have less amount of them. And in part it's true, but the other part is that, well, here this is raw. So it means that the fermentation only got to 50 degrees centigrade. You know, you can get infections. You can get other problems from this type of, if they're not well, if they can be contaminated, basically. So the next step that is necessary to have the final chocolate we like to have is the roasting, because it goes to 300 Fahrenheit, so 140 roughly centigrade. So now it's really cooking. Your bean is cooking. And this is another critical step, because all the previous compounds that were formed during fermentation and were critical, now they can develop into the full aroma of the chocolate, of the cocoa. So this is a critical step, because of those precursors being transformed into the final compounds that gives the aroma and the flavor of the chocolate. During this process, so while there are machines that are stirring with the temperature, with the high temperature, the cocoa beans, the reaction that happens is called Maillard reaction, that is typical of other type of, any kind of cooking also food that brownish, whatever food you're cooking. If it's a steak on your grill and gets brownish, that's the Maillard reaction. If it's sugar that gets caramel, that's a Maillard reaction. If you're cooking bread, that is my favorite, is the crust of the bread. So I like when there is a Maillard reaction that gives me the nice dark crust for the bread. So that's what it is here. And if during the roasting time, so what is happening is that other reactions are happening, more volatiles are leaving, so some acidity, some acid that were there are going to be depressed in terms of quantity, are going to leave the cocoa beans. So it means that there is a less acidity, less bitterness. And so you are enhancing the flavor, but you're also breaking down some of the good ingredients of the healthy ingredients, the polyphenol ingredients, while you are roasting these beans. And this is what is after the roasting. So the cocoa beans now doesn't have the husk anymore, because the humidity that was inside the bean made an explosion of the crust of the beans. So the husk is easy now to get rid of. And now you have really only the center part that is called the nib. This is really the chocolate. These are chocolate pieces, kind of not refined because are not in the final shape, but this is what the chocolate is. And you can have different colors just depending on the type, on the origin, you know, the country of origin, the type of plant, the type of roasting, the amount of roasting. So many, many are the differences into the colors and the type. But what is the main thing is that half of it, or more than half of it, because we are around 54-57%, is fat, is cocoa butter, still, even in these nibs. So what you need to do now is to have a way to make that butter to spread around this little nib with all the parts of the cocoa powder, basically, if you can imagine. So what you need to do is the grinding. So now it comes as a mechanical step, so you really need to crush them. So this is the grinding, where you have those nibs that already went fermented, were roasted, and now you have this. Since there is a mechanical shear, so there is a temperature are getting higher, so there is a liquid. And this is called cocoa liquor. This is what you're looking for, basically, because look at this nice paste of liquor. It's quite nice, although we saw the little particles still in this phase. So the cocoa liquor then goes into different processes because now we want to isolate the butter, basically, because that's a good part. That's a part that can be used in different way. And we want to isolate that from the rest, that is the cocoa particles. So we go through filtration and to pressing, so through some press, through some sieves, to have the two parts. One that is the cocoa butter, the other one is that is called cocoa press cake. From this one, just by other manipulation, you have the powder, the cocoa powder. So these are now the two ingredients you have from that initial bean. How do we make now, so this is the butter, still yellowish, this is the cocoa powder that instead, or the press, this is the press cake, is the darker one. How do we make chocolate? We just need to mix the ingredient. So we have the liquor, then we'll have, if we want to have the dark chocolate, we start obviously with the liquor, we add some of the butter, and then we put sugar. If we want to have milk chocolate, well, we will have the same one plus the milk here. So we add milk to this one. What if we want to have white chocolate? White, we don't need any dark part. So the white chocolate will be just the butter, the sugar, and the milk. That's all. We have no cocoa liquor here. And that is the reason why people suggest that if you want to have the positive parts, besides the taste and the pleasure that you get from the taste of the chocolate, if you want to have the more poly, more the good particles of the compounds of the chocolate, you should have the cocoa liquor in higher percentages in order to get all the benefits of the chocolate. So all the polyphenols are here, not here, because they're in the dark chocolate. That's why they say it's in the dark chocolate. And these are the two processes that are now critical too, and specifically for the conching. Tempering, you can do it at home. Strangely enough, it can be done at home because the temperature are low enough that can be done also at home. The conching is a proprietary thing. So you can't find any type of detailed information on internet because each company doesn't want to share its own recipe because it's another critical part that will make your final product smooth, with a smooth flavor but not dull. So very smooth but not dull, with a great viscosity so that when it melts in your mouth, you like it. So the texture and viscosity will be critical. And they add also some emulsifiers because the cocoa, they want to spread the cocoa butter. They don't want to have clumps of butter because otherwise when you melt it in your mouth, you feel that there are some parts that are tasty and some parts that are not, while you want to have more of a homogeneous taste in your mouth. And so that's what happens in the conching. And the conching is, again, is a process where they have to shear it, press it. So they do several things, but you can't find what they really do in details. Then the other process is instead is tempering, that is related to the final product in terms of how it looks like, shiny instead of dull. So it's critical to have a shine chocolate, and also if it snaps when you break it, or if instead can bend and doesn't snap. So it was interesting to read that the tempering is, so this effect, this difference in the final product is due to the crystal composition of that chocolate, of the final product. For the ones of you who had attended material science, you know what I'm talking about, because when you are, so you have a liquid, basically. We are talking with temperatures that are higher than their solidification point, so they're fluid, they're liquid. Then you start to lower the temperature. We know that depending on the compound, you might have some crystals that arise and they grow. For butter, the type of fat of cocoa butter, is the composition of the fat is different. So you have different type of molecules. It means that you have different crystal structure depending on the temperature that you are crystallizing it. So you want to have a specific crystalline structure that gives the best mouthfeel sensation. And in order to do that, there are scientists. Imagine scientists studying all these details about chocolate that determine that one specific, there are six different types, six different crystals because of the different compounds. Only one is the one that they want to obtain in order to have the shiny exterior, the snappy, and just more uniform taste in the mouth. In order to do that, they have to raise the temperature, lower it at a certain temperature that they decide, and then start mixing so that they break down those nuclei where the crystallinity starts to happen, where all the crystals start to grow, so that they can obtain that. What happens if I leave my nice, shiny, snappy piece of chocolate in my car and it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit outside and it gets melted? I go then back, then I go at home, it cools down so it's solid again. I might see some whitish parts in my chocolate. So what happened is that you reversed the tempering process because you melted again, basically. So you erased all the history of that chocolate maker that was trying to get the best crystallinity structure. So that now, so when that happened, it's a very good chocolate. It's nothing bad, but the whitish part is because the cocoa butter surfaced, so went more on the surface, so it becomes dull, whitish. But that's what it is. So instead of having a uniform distribution of the butter, it's more on the surface. But you can still eat it, so it's still good. And this is just to show that the tempering can also happen at home. You can do it. People do it at home. So why do we love chocolate? Yes, it's very good, but why do we love chocolate? So I tried to find some information about it. And is it the smell, is it the taste, the texture, or is something more? Well, there are many studies about it. And I picked one that shows that there are some of the, these are some of the main active compounds. So there are some compounds that are similar to the ones that are found in marijuana, but the amount is so small that really is not, there is no any effect of addiction from that. So there is no, the concentration is too low to cause any effect. And then there are the caffeine, the theobromine that we already saw, plus another couple of ones that induce the brain to feel, to have the dopamine and serotonin so that we feel good. And those are the ones that really link the pleasure we remember or we already have when we are opening that piece of chocolate. So the dopamine and the serotonin. So this is just what these doctors say, what these scientists say, that it stimulates the brain's pleasure center. So that's what those molecules, those active compounds do. So that's in terms of why we love chocolate, but it's really good for you. So it was interesting to understand, to read, that where the idea of "is good for you" came from. Basically, they noticed that is in an island off of Panama. All the people that lives there, they have cocoa beans, lots of cocoa plants, and they use the cocoa beans as a drink. So directly the beans, they don't go through the roasting roasting process. So they have what is called the raw cocoa beans, and they use it in that way. Well, there is a very low risk in that population of having a cardiovascular disease, heart problem. So that sparks an idea of saying, okay, is this genetic or is this not genetic? So it turns out it's not genetic, because the same people, if someone moved somewhere else where they didn't have that amount of cocoa to drink and that type of cultural routine, well, they started to develop the cardiovascular diseases. So it was not genetic. So there have been many studies. Obviously, the laboratory studies, all of them points to the fact that it's good for you. But how much that can be translated into real clinical trials is hard, because they can't follow people in their diets in such a specific way to really focus on one ingredient, on one component, so only chocolate compared to the rest of the diet, the rest of the lifestyle. So there are might more than yes or no. So I wanted to go to somewhere else. So the Harvard Medical School made a study, so that was a clinical study, and they do say, well, in reality, from what it seems that the chocolate might lower blood pressure. So it's lowering blood pressure where someone is already with a high level of blood pressure. So they confirm that finding. And so in general, since the chocolate contains flavonoids, and we know from other fruits and vegetables too that those are good for you, because those are polyphenols, basically, then it has to be good for you. But that's the idea. So chocolate might prevent diabetes, lower bad cholesterol. And basically what you want to do in general is to try, if you want to have chocolate because you like it, obviously, but if you want to also have more attention on the good one, on the good parts of chocolate, then you want to have a higher percentage of cocoa, and you want to read in the description. You don't want to have a fat in that chocolate that is not cocoa butter, because cocoa butter is good for you. It's a good fat. The other ones they add to, obviously, to make it cheaper, are not good for you. So that's also an indication of the quality of the chocolate you're eating. And here is just a note that says the good parts of the chocolate are the ones that are not really tasty, that we don't like as a taste, because those give the bitterness to the chocolate. So the flavonoids or the polyphenols give that bitter taste that we don't like it too much. So some producers on purpose lower the amount of flavonoids, because in that way the chocolate is sweeter, it has less of that bitter taste. So that's just to keep in mind when we eat our chocolate, if we are looking for something that is not only the pleasure of eating the chocolate. So some curiosity, just to end my conversation here. There are 9,000 taste buds on the human tongue, and each of them roughly contains 18 sensory cells. So that's a lot of sensation that we get. Chocolate flavor is, the flavor itself is extremely complex. It has more than 500 compounds. And this was very interesting from a scientific point of view in terms of non-Newton fluid. So chocolate is a non-Newton fluid. For the ones of you who will study fluid mechanics, when you have a fluid that is under shear stress, the viscosity, so the amount of stress that you have to place on the fluid in order to move it of a certain amount can increase or decrease while you're doing it. So some fluids behave in the way that decreases, some other ones in the way that increases. When it's increasing, it's a Newtonian fluid. When it's decreasing, like chocolate, is a non-Newtonian fluid. So that was just interesting to read. And here I am. Thank you very much for listening to my talk.